name's Miranda Hyde.
Miranda Hyde. And where are you located?
Grants Pass, Oregon. Charity kind of started for me. I have a story for when I was about like maybe 5 years into the industry, maybe four, I met my husband. And he's a widow. And his first wife passed away only about 2 years into their marriage. They were together for about, would you say seven?
Five.
And when she passed away, she left him three kids.
Oh, wow.
The last one being a multi-handicapped child. So Stephen's got cerebral palsy and autism.
Wow.
So I went into this relationship thinking like, wow, I'm not actually dating a divorcee, which I'm a divorcee. I'm dating a widow. So the form of commitment that's like within a relationship like that was super cool. And to find out like the kid had all of these like health issues and how like this innocent bystander swore to his dying wife that he was never going to let her kids ever go to her mom because she just never really knew how to take care of these kids. So I started kind of like looking at my clientele basis and started really focusing on like, what are my clients struggling with? Like, everyone obviously have struggles in life. Like, everyone's got their own journey.
Right.
Sometimes the journey is super awesome. Sometimes it's really low. So that's when, like, the first time I really started listening to people. Because I don't really feel like that I ever listened.
Right.
Because...
So what I was going to ask you is, I didn't mean to interrupt, but so how do you find out about your client's struggle? You ask them questions? Or
exactly. Right. I started turning the conversation about just their hair. So like, oh, now that we've established our consultation, hey, how's your day been going?
Right.
How's your kids? Do you have kids? This or that or whatever. And like, it changed that whole dynamic in that relationship when I started realizing that I was selling the relationship first and the service afterwards.
Right.
And that personal connection that I started getting with my clients, that it was like so different. And I started realizing that there was like this huge community in our area of people that have kids that were like born... Not because the parents did something wrong, they were just missing a random gene. And then since I'm a huge dog lover, I started realizing that there was also too like a culture in our community that people were training their own dogs to give to those kids that were in the same classroom as my husband.
Oh, wow.
So like at this exact juncture of meeting him, I was realizing that like one out of every, say 10 of my guests, and I have like 225 guests on my list, have either a sister with kid with disabilities, or they had disabilities, or their aunt had a kid with disabilities. And I was like, whoa, like I now have a client who trains these dogs.
Okay.
And I have a husband who could like, or boyfriend at this point in time, that could use a dog like this. And it was like that first time ever that I was able to kind of take like the passion of what I do with my clientele and the passion that I have with animals. And I was able to like start connecting. And the first time I was able to go to the Canine Angels program with a couple of my clients who, when they heard that the people that we board our dogs with do this, that they were able to get like a dog for their kids, I like kind of watched that training program and I was like, well, if I have a couple dogs, they should go through this training program for Steven, for his dog. And to see like these kids in like wheelchairs and kids that have like Down syndrome or autism or cerebral palsy or whatever issues that they had, how they loved that animal, and no matter what the disability with the child was, they had the same kind of connection that I had with my pets. And being able to have that like intermingled behind the chair and have that camaraderie that when my clients would come in, they would bust out the photos like, look at our labradoodle with our baby and blah 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 blah. Like, it just brought chills. And I instantly was like, okay, I need a lot more of this in my life. Like, I need to start like moving forward. So then I would have like clients that were like in the Rotary, people that were in for Hearts with a Mission, people like our like community list of like people taking care of people was like so big that we just started deciding like what's core issues to us, what's super important to us in our community.
Right.
Because we only have 30,000 people, super small. People are from California. No one wants to pay higher property taxes. We have no sheriff's department, minimal police. We have no jail. We have no mental health.
Well, I was going to ask you which one gives you more passion, but it sounds like all of it.
All of it. And our pot, since we're a legalized marijuana state, it brought in a whole different array of stuff. And with that brings in property, because like pot's like a burning match theory. Like, everyone jumped into it thinking they're going to make all this money.
Right.
And so we just started kind of like looking at organizations that really meant a lot to us. And we've kind of narrowed it down to, we're animal lovers, hands down. So like Canine Angels, will always be my first love. And thankfully to Paul Mitchell and Beauty Supply Group, they always send me whatever I want, whenever I want it. Like Julia Provost, I can call her anytime, day or night, and she's like, send you $1,000 worth of this, or we'll send you that, or we'll send you this. So we do that one. The Josephine County Foundation is my second. It is kids that are in high school doing nonprofit projects for our community. With all the teen suicide and all the shootings and all the horrible tragedies that are happening in high schools, we got the Rachel's organization to come to our community. That cost $50,000, and it's Rachel, who was the first girl that got shot and killed during Columbine.
Okay.
Her mom came to our community and did a four high school talking to and pep rally on how to identify bullies and talk with people. So once again, I got Paul Mitchell involved. They sent me Nero stuff. They sent people out so I can auction off stuff. My salon raised $10,000 of the $50,000 for it.
Right.
And then also too, we do the food bank.
But have you always been like that? Because like the story you told me about what you do with what you guys did with the employees from your husband's work.
Yeah.
Like that was, that's like another level. That's like,
yeah, that's like
that was like so have you always been like a sharer like that?
Probably not. I was super blessed to be raised in a military family. My parents have really good college educations. My mom and dad made all the money in the world, which was awesome. So my childhood was great. I have to give thanks to my first husband. He was an amazing human being who made tons of money, so it fit right next into my family situation. He was a gambler and liked prostitutes. So while I was going through beauty school and doing things, I ended up losing everything. So this whole beautiful house and car situation, I went to having like no car, a stylist renting a room in one of my clients' houses, and the generosity that she gave to me, and having like all my clients taking care of me, kind of started breeding into it. And then about like a couple years into our marriage, after having all that generosity and feeling like I kind of needed to start paying that forward because I got super blessed that people took me under our arm, our house got robbed. We purchased a brand new home, and it was in a certain income bracket, and a real estate agent's daughter hacked the real estate market MSL listings on purchases and sellings, and they hit every house that was worth $250,000 to $400,000. And my husband came home to our dogs that were trained to take care of his stepson, almost beaten to death.
What?
Everything that we owned was picked through, stolen. Our safe that was lag bolted to the subflooring was removed. We went from having like 50 grand sitting in the savings, all the money, like all our hard work, all of our labor, all the things that we purchased, and we were still doing good things for people, but not to the level that we were doing.
Right.
It was all gone. And I went to work the next day because that's my refuge. I wanted my clients, I wanted my camaraderie, I wanted my culture, I wanted my people. And I went into my salon, and all my coworkers showed up with towels and blankets and cups and food and gift cards. People that were losing their homes because of the market dropping and failing.
Oh, so this is like during the
recession? Scrimped money. My clients,
clients
scrimped together, and just, it felt like that the community, like the food bank, the canine angels, everyone that we little gave bits to came through, not the $5 that I used to give them, hundreds of dollars for us. And it was like this life-altering moment when I'm sitting there in my salon thinking all the little tiny things that I thought that I was doing good for people, I got back like a millionfold.
Okay.
And I'm gonna get emotional. It was the coolest ever. It's cool.
It's okay.
It's okay.
I'm such an emotional human being. And
it's all right. It's an emotional thing to go through.
And after that, it was like on, because to be a recipient of that was awesome.
So I listened to this whole report about power and how power corrupts. If you want, I'll send you the link. It's pretty interesting. And it says that human beings, metaphysically, like in our brains, the more power we get, like we stop being able to identify and associate and empathize with people. They started studying like seventh graders, and they found out that it happens like that young. Like the more you do better and the more you have dominion over something, the less you're able to relate to your peers. But they said the only people who do not suffer from it, no matter how much power they have, are people who still practice philanthropy and share. Like, success alone doesn't mean anything unless you share with people. Because if you've done anything, like the way you, everything you just described, like, you know that it's not infinite, it's finite.
No, everything's monetary.
It's gonna come and go. Uh-huh. Like, nothing is promised. It's like, it's really just interesting that that when you share and you practice, I don't really like to call it charity, I think more like just sharing. You know what I mean?
Living forward.
Right.
Yeah.
And I really think that sometimes, you know, in the beauty profession and in the barber profession, like just in general, we forget that we have that connection to the people, you know? Bye. You. Travel safe. Yes. So yeah, it was really just good to hear your story. So tell me more about like what you and Joe do together as far as like sharing and charity.
Yeah,
on
so
that level.
Now after all that being like done, we try to every year obviously do the canine thing. But
before I cut you off, your employees must love you too, I guess. I bet.
Do you know what? I really feel like that my employees sometimes get annoyed with me because I'm definitely the salon spaz. Like, I'm always the one, like, trying to, like, uplift and, like, try to get people up and do things. But then again, I'm also very OCD and very meticulous in the salon.
Uh-huh.
And I want my salon's culture to be a certain way where guests get, like, instantly, as soon as they walked in the door, everyone's like, hey!
Right.
And that's hard because my salon's 4,000 square feet.
Okay.
It's broken up into, like, a reception area, the hair area, dispense. Our nails are cut off. We have 5 treatment rooms. I'm in my own treatment room, so I don't actually greet my own guests because of that reason.
Okay.
My guests are 55 to 82. That's 89% of my clientele rate.
Okay.
They obviously, older women like women with tattoos and short hair. But I think it's like, it's the environment that I provide for them.
Right.
And so I try my hardest to like break free from my room. I'm not the salon owner. I feel like I travel too much.
Okay.
I am the educational manager.
Okay.
And the second manager. There's 2 of us. So there's one on the hair floor, and then there's one of me in the back. But I feel like that, you know, garbages, cleaning, customer service, coffee, internet, everything's got to be main priority. Like, how's your experience? What's going on? So the team, I think, loves it. I think they love all the nonprofit. Like, I do a drawing every other week for our guests whenever there's a holiday.
Wow.
We do a huge drawing. So, like, for Father's Day, we put a big, huge Maverick and Mitch Man thing. So all of our male guests got 2 tickets in there.
Okay.
I always do it on our Facebook page. Mother's Day, the same exact thing. Christmas, whenever one of the charities is coming up, I'm always selling auctions. I go to all the local businesses in town. I'm associated with Rotor.
All right, I think I've heard enough. You're about to make me feel like I'm slacking.
Yeah, no, I try my hardest. Community awareness is key.
Right.
And we have another salon in town, not trying to say I'm competing with them, because I'm not competing with Rogue Barbers, because I cannot compete with a barbershop being a full-service salon.
Okay.
But their social media, their compassion for the community, and their community give back inspires me to try to push harder, not to necessarily compete with them, as we don't do the same thing. They are full-blown barbershop. What they do has nothing to do with my squishy, furry animal thing.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But I really like that healthy competition between both of us.
Okay.
So the salon, I think, loves it to some small degree, but I think they get burnout with it really easy because they haven't been there. I don't think that they've had that like connection yet.
Okay.
Or that experience yet to inspire them, and I try my hardest to do it without being a little over pushy, but you can only inspire someone so far to be what they need to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I think they're great. I think my salon owner sometimes is like, we're gonna tone it down a notch. We don't need to be that happy all the time. I'm like, we probably should ship rainbows every day of our lives, because every day is a gift. But that's just me. But
I distracted you.
Yeah.
I had to ask you about what you and Joe, what you guys do together.
Yeah,
with you.
So typically we do our like normal like food bank, and then if there's a situation or an opportunity that does show up, but for Thanksgiving every year is our biggie. We give thanks not to our family, but we give thanks to people in the world, because there's a lot of people out there that don't realize that they're loved,
right,
or they've hit in like some serious rock hard times and some shit like the house getting robbed, and they just tap out emotionally because mental health is so under dramatized in the community.
In about another 30 minutes. Thank you.
So we try to choose a different organization every year. And what I do is I don't really tell my clients what I'm doing because I really feel like that I don't want them to get more involved than what they should be. But they do see it actually on Thanksgiving. I do a huge post every year. But I take every tip that they give me and every gift that's money-wise and or any gift that's like food-wise or cookies or whatever, depending on what it is, and I save it. I keep the alcohol for myself, obviously. And then I double it.
Okay.
So like say if I get a tray of cookies, I go to Costco and I buy a tray of cookies. And if someone gives me $100, I put $100 in out of my own paycheck.
Okay.
And then we pick a different local organization. So last year was the Humane Society.
Okay.
And we went and took all the cookies and all the candy and all the food to the employees as a thank you for what they do, because they are like these silent warriors that are donating their time to love these animals. And then we bought food and bully sticks and canned food and helped pay for like shots and immunizations, and we donated to the veterinary clinics that donated to them, and we did monetary gifts to all of them as like a thank you. And then I videotape all of it and I make a little like collaboration and I put it on my YouTube channel and I put it on my Facebook and my Instagram, and then I tell all my clients in there, we couldn't have done this without you paying me every single week.
Wow. Yeah.
And then the money that you gave, I took money out of my checking account to match it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I don't know what our organization is this year. It could be like Hearts for a Mission, which are kids that come from really bad homes that run away because their dads are drunk or their moms are like doing drugs, and they have no place to go, so there are safe homes for them, or like CASA, similar situation, safe homes.
Okay.
We've done the Canine Angels. We've done, you know, like I said, obviously like the dogs for the multi-handicapped children that are for free. I kind of feel like there will be a guest that will come into my salon and with like the right conversation will say, oh my God, I just heard the horrible story, or I just got involved with this, and it'll like pull at my heartstrings to the point that I'll start crying again, and then that'll be my mission from that moment on.
Okay.
So it varies from year to year.
Okay, so it does sound like that, you know, you having more time. No, thank you. Okay, thank you. You having this time off is going to be good. And then the next thing I'm going to ask you is, like, what do you do to, like, for yourself? To take care of yourself?
I need battery definitely recharged behind the chair, making people happy. Like, I feel like that when I'm at home in my phone, I get a text message and I'm like, and then I get, like, the text message from someone saying that, like, my optimism or my whatever made their day. And that really helps recharge my battery.
Yes.
I also, too, try to get myself immersed in the Paul Mitchell culture as much as possible, because this helps, like, real good. Thankfully, my husband travels with me everywhere.
I know.
So we get that opportunity to be able to do that. We're going to go camping for my birthday this year. I've never been homeless for a weekend. So I'm really looking forward to going camping. On July 26th.
Well, you put it like that, it doesn't sound so attractive to be
homeless.
Yeah, but it's
like...
No, really?
Yeah. But it really is. Like,
it is mostly
I'm just
going
to go out into the wilderness and sleep on the ground.
Sleep on the ground.
Yeah. But it sounds amazing.
Cook on the fire. Yeah.
But we do like a lot of kayaking on our days off. Like whenever we do get a firm
you get outside.
It is off-grid, offside. Like we are like hikers, paddleboarders, kayakers, rock climbing.
All right.
We do CrossFit.
Okay.
We really try to dedicate that. And then we also really pushes the fact that at a certain time of night, the phones have to go away. And on certain days, they have to go away.
Okay.
Every other year, we do go on a vacation. So this year, we went to Hawaii for 15 days by ourselves. And I did not take my cell phone at all. I had all my phone calls forwarded to my salon. So for 15 days, I didn't even answer my phone.
Nice.
So it's like we try our hardest to disconnect.
That's good.
I like sleeping. I try to do that at least 5 hours a day. At least 5 hours a day.
Sleeping's good.
But then again, I kind of feel like that, like, I don't know, I have so much life.
Yeah.
And every situation that comes across me is the only situation I'm ever going to get. And I don't want to tell a situation I'm tired, or
right,
I don't want to take that on, or I don't want this awesome opportunity. Because what happens if that's an opportunity that I'm going to walk away with my cup more full because I took the time to do it?
Right.
So I would guess I'd have to identify my like self-care or loving myself first. This is not missing out on a potential amazing opportunity to connect with someone.
Nice.
So.
Awesome.